around 4 a.m. and the high around 4 p.m. In short, everyone's body temperature has a very wide range, probably between 97 and 100 degrees, with some even higher or lower. So does body temperature tell us anything at all? Yes, because a very high temperature, say over 100 degrees, usually means that someone is sick. But there's nothing magical about 98.6 that makes it any different from a lot of other nearby numbers. This moment of science comes from Indiana University with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by Don Ulin with help from Henry Prang in Medical Sciences. I'm Don Glass.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria Restaurant in downtown Champaign. Radio Maria serves dinner and tapas every evening, lunch on Fridays and Saturdays from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., and a Sunday brunch. Registration is available for emails on news, menu changes, and upcoming special events.
In sports, Florida State has been put on 4 years probation by the NCAA and will lose scholarships in football and forfeit games because of an academic cheating scandal. Some five dozen Florida State athletes cheated on an online test from the fall of 2006 through summer 2007 or received improper help from staffers who provided them with answers to the exam and typed papers for them. The NCAA Infractions Committee says the case was extremely serious because of the large number of student athletes involved in various sports. The University of Illinois men's basketball team fell to Penn State last night in a fraction of a second, the Nittany Lions-Taylor battle. His basket with 3/10 of a second left in the game gave Penn State a 64-63 win over the 23rd-ranked Illini. Illinois finishes the regular season 23-8 overall, 11-7 in the Big Ten. Meanwhile, in Indianapolis yesterday in the Women's Big Ten Tournament, the 9th-seeded Illini advanced to play number 1-seed Ohio State today. The win yesterday was over Penn State. Illinois' Lacey Simpson and Jenna Smith combined for 43 points in the 58-49 victory over Penn State. Today at the Women's Big Ten Tourney, Wisconsin overcame a 12-point deficit to beat second-seeded Michigan State 56-50 in quarterfinal action. The win sent the number 7-seed Badgers into the semifinals for the first time since 2002. Those semifinals are tomorrow, and Michigan State will play either Indiana or Purdue. Wisconsin will play either Indiana or Purdue. Indiana Pacers guard Mike Dunleavy has had surgery on his right knee and will be out indefinitely. The Pacers say the 6'9" Dunleavy had the operation at a clinic in Colorado to remove a bone spur and to repair a torn tendon in the knee. There's no timetable for his return, and the team said in a statement that the recovery will be lengthy. Chicago Bulls and the Milwaukee Bucks will battle it out at the United Center tonight, and the St. Louis Blues and the Tampa Bay Lightning face off in Florida tonight. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible in part by Bevere Cafe, offering breakfast from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. and lunches from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, and catering. Bevere Cafe is student-operated on the second floor of Bevere Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
He's a writer whose mother is American. His father is Pakistani. He grew up in Pakistan with frequent visits to his mother's family in Wisconsin. A graduate of Dartmouth and Yale Law School, he now runs his family's farm in Pakistan's southern Punjab region. It's a rich source for his writing. In his new book, In Other Rooms, Other Wonders, Danielle Muinuddin creates a vivid picture of Pakistan through a series of interwoven stories. NPR's Lynn Neary has this profile of the author.
Danielle Muinuddin sees himself as something of a translator, interpreting life in a remote part of Pakistan for a Western audience. Muinuddin says he lives between those two cultures, but is not really part of either.
In both cases, either in the West or in Pakistan, people always view me as being somebody slightly from the outside. And I think I view myself as being sort of from the outside, and that's something that's both can be aggravating and painful and also can be quite liberating and fun.
Muinadhin may feel like an outsider, but he writes like an insider. Set mostly in rural Punjab and the city of Lahore, In Other Rooms, Other Wonders recreates a world that few Westerners have experienced firsthand. The stories, which take place over several decades, explore the lives of both rich and poor under Pakistan's rigid feudal class structure. Whether writing about the lowliest servant girl or a privileged beauty, an ambitious politician, or clever electrician, one senses that these are people Muinadhin understands well.
I know them very well. You know, I played in their houses when I was little, and now I go to their houses when they're sick or when somebody dies or when they get married, and so I know them in that way. And also, I've, you know, done business with them, and I think that doing business with somebody is a very intimate act. So that's also important. I've hired them and fired them and sold to them and bought from them. When you're doing business with somebody, you need to look at the world through their eyes.
Muinadhin moved to his family's farm in the Punjab right after graduating from college. After a stint back in America, attending law school and then working for a firm in New York, he moved back there again and has settled into a routine that allows him to do the two things he loves best, farming and writing.
So that I wake up in the morning and sort of meet my managers and then write till lunch, and then after lunch I farm, you know, which means a lot of the time, unfortunately, looking at accounts books and going through budgets and so on, which is very dull. And then as much often as I can, I sneak off and go walk around the fields and look at various projects that are underway. And
listen in on conversations.
Listen in on conversations, exactly, and meet all these peculiar characters. Of course, I mean, especially as I've become more and more conscious of being a fiction writer, there's always this other little figure seated on my shoulder as I'm having a business conversation with some completely wacky person who I know is completely trying to rip me off in some fabulous and hilarious way. There's always this little figure sitting on my shoulder and saying, calm down, it doesn't matter what happens, because this is going to be in your book.
Each story in the book is a snippet from a character's life, a moment in time that defines them or changes them forever. In the opening story, Muinadhin's portrayal of the crafty electrician who spends his days tooling around his landlord's estate on a motorcycle is so vivid that it's easy to think, I know someone like that, even though he lives in a world thousands of miles and light years away from contemporary America.
Nawab each evening put the bike on its kickstand and waited for his girls to come, all of them around him, jumping on him. His face often at this moment had the same expression, an expression of childish, innocent joy, which contrasted strangely and even sadly with the heaviness of his face and its lines and stubble. He would raise his nose and sniff the air to see if he could find out what his wife had cooked for dinner, and then he went into her, finding her always in the same posture, making him tea, fanning the fire in the little hearth.
Every character in the book is linked in some way to the wealthy landowner K.K. Haruni. The wealthy are related to him, the poor dependent on him. Servants are there to take care of him, and he's only vaguely aware of their tragedies and joys as they live out their lives in the other rooms on his land and in his homes. Muinadhin says he had already started writing the stories when he realized that Haruni could provide the unifying element.
When I was writing the stories, I was quite consciously trying to create a sort of a picture of the whole society from the lowest to the highest. But as I went to put them together, I realized that this one figure sort of ran through a number of the stories, and that by doing a little tinkering, I could make him the central line tying them together.
So interesting that for some of the people, he is such an important part of their life that when he's gone, their lives are really
ruined.
What does a character like that mean to those people?
Well, I mean, you know, your feudal patron is your patron, and he is the source of all good things and also the source of all bad things. But especially the feudal patron is the man who protects you, and it's by your adherence to him is your sort of capital. So when he dies, you're nobody because you have no protector.
In this strict hierarchy, no one is lower than the women. And in story after story, women, both rich and poor, use sex to manipulate men in order to get their way, change their lives, find some happiness. Time and again, the tactic fails and they're left worse off than before. In fact, many of the stories end in tragedy. But somehow the overall effect is more fascinating than depressing, which Muinadhin explains this way.
The movement of the stories is always towards affirmation in some way. I mean, just by describing the life force of the characters, if you make it vivid enough, it's affirmative, even if there may be tragedies within it. I mean, life itself, real life, is affirmative always. Life affirms because life goes on.
Winnadine also manages his mother's family farm, which he rents out to the Amish, and he's already started writing stories about life in Wisconsin. It may not be the Punjab, but he says he feels intimately connected to the people there as well. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. It's 2:50 Central Time, 70 degrees in Urbana.
I'm walking.
Fats Domino gets us moving into this next portion of the program. I'm Celeste Quinn. Get out your walking shoes and prepare to walk to the moon. Well, we're not really going to walk to the moon. What Champaign County walkers are trying to do is to log by walking here on Earth, the miles between here and the moon, one step at a time. Moonwalk 2009 is a contest among residents of Champaign County and Peoria to see whose residents can log the most miles over a period of 2 months. Joining me to tell us how it works is the Health and Wellness Program Coordinator for University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, Jamie Kleiss. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, good afternoon.
So why should we sign up for Moonwalk?
Because it's good for your health. That's a pretty easy thing to say, but it's really good for your health, and a little competition gives us a little motivation to get moving.
And it's fun.
It is fun. I have a lot of people tell me that. This is our second year doing it, so I have a lot of returnees saying how much fun their office department had or their, you know, group of friends that get together had doing it.
Yeah. Now, can kids take part?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Kids can take part. The easiest thing to do for kids especially is to get a pedometer for them, and that put it on your hip and then have them wear it, and then they can log their miles as well.
So how do we sign up for this?
You first need to go to our website, which is moonwalk.extension.uiuc.edu, and all the information is there. You can sign up as an individual, or you can create a team.
And then how does it work from there?
From there, if you create a team, you can invite others via email to be on your team, and then they register themselves. We ask that you just have 5 people for a team, get a little camaraderie going. And then starting April 3rd, you will go daily or weekly, however often you want, go to our website. You will log miles. You will log steps. You can actually do miles biked, the miles you swim or rollerblade, you hike, things like that. You can enter that in. And it converts it to steps, and then they're all combined, and they are actually updated live on our website. So if you add 5 miles, our little ticker will go up 5 miles.
Okay. So April 3rd is the launch. When's the splashdown, so to speak?
The splashdown is June 12th. That's the actual when the race ends. But we're going to have a little award ceremony called Splashdown, and that'll be a little bit after that.
Okay. Are there any special events coming up to help us get geared up for April 3rd?
Definitely. On April 2nd, which is the night before the actual 10-week race starts, we are going to have our launch party out at Parkland Planetarium after work. It's from 5 to 6:30. We're encouraging people to come out. It's kind of like a little pep rally. We're going to have 2 special moon shows by Dave Leek, the planetarium guy who runs that, refreshments from Edible Arrangements, and we are going to have our commander this year, Moonwalk Commander Tom Kasich from the News Gazette, come out and be our MC. So he's helping us out this year.
Okay, great. He's a great walker.
He is, and I heard he's running the marathon, too. So
yeah.
We're hopefully going to log all those steps, too.
Okay. Hey, before we let you go, do you have some tips to share with us this afternoon about how to get the most out of a walk?
Definitely. Probably plan out your route. I think that's the easiest thing to do. We'll have some events every Saturday for the 10 weeks to kind of give a little motivation. Different parks and rec centers, all those events, again, are on our website. We'll do about a 5K walk every Saturday morning throughout Champaign County. I say get a good pair of walking shoes, get a pedometer. That can help, because especially if you want to increase to a fitness level of walking, that can help you kind of track it and go up from there.
Okay, and hold your head up high and
definitely
stand up straight.
And move your arms. That really helps.
Start walking.
You keep your arms going.
Okay, great time. This is the second year Champaign County has taken part in the Moonwalk. How did we do last year?
Well, we came in third place last year, but it was our first year, and we were really excited about people that did it. We had almost 1,600 people. This year, our goal is 2,000. I will say, when I just checked the website, I think we had like 75 teams signed up.
Great.
With almost 500 people. And we're still 3 weeks out, so we're really excited. So hopefully people can get to our website and create some more teams.
Okay, well, I'm glad I'm talking to you this afternoon because I need to sign up with my team captain here at WILL.
Great.
Elizabeth Weathers.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there, we'll leave it. Jamie, thank you so much, and we'll check in with you over the race period to see how we're doing.
That would be great. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Jamie Kleiss. She is the Health and Wellness Program Coordinator for University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County.
I want to walk you home. Please let me walk you home. I want to walk you home. Please let me walk you home. You look so good to me. Ooh-wee. I wish I was a lucky guy who could walk you right on down the aisle. I love the way you walk. I love to hear you talk. I love the way you walk. I love to hear you talk. I'm not trying to be smart. I'm not trying to break your heart. But if I ask you for a date, will you tell me that I'm not too late? I want to hold your hand.
Earth and sky.
According to Jack Fellows, cities have more than one incentive to plan ahead for global warming.
They're going to gain knowledge on how to deal with climate change, and that knowledge is going to be exportable to other areas and to other countries.
Fellows, who spoke with Earth Sky at a science meeting, is a leading expert on climate change and public policy. He works with the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado.
So it's critically important for communities not to plan for current climate, but a climate that might be 2 to 4 degrees warmer than it is today.
Fellows suggested that cities around the world will have to cope with sea level rise, droughts, and floods. He thinks that if cities plan ahead, they might be able to sell their adaptive knowledge and technologies. Technologies affecting things like water infrastructure, bridges, wind farms, and solar farms.
You know, where are you going to put those? How are you going to build them? And I don't think we even really know all the opportunities that are going to exist. Right now, there's a pretty good sense that it will be substantial, billions of dollars.
Thanks today to the National Science Foundation and to the U.S. Geological Survey, celebrating the International Year of Planet Earth. More at yourplanetearth.com.